From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. International markets are jittery from U.S.-initiated tariffs on Chinese imports and China's swift response with announcement of its own tariffs. The battle of tariffs between the world's top economic powerhouses was initiated by U.S. President Donald Trump, who frequently accused China of being a currency manipulator during his presidential campaign. Earlier this year, Trump imposed a 30% tariff on solar panel imports from China, and then said during his State of the Union address that, quote, rivals like China challenge our interests, our economy, and our values. Now, after Trump proposed a 25% tariff on Chinese imports like semiconductors and aircraft equipment just days ago, China responded by announcing a similar tariff on U.S. imports, including soybeans, beef, cars, and more. Some commentators have dismissed fears of a trade war as the tariffs only impact a minuscule portion of the economies of both nations. But what if the war escalates? And what about the fact that the U.S. has a massive trade deficit with China and that China owns more than $1 trillion of U.S. debt? Joining me to put all of these issues into a progressive perspective is Dr. Richard Wolff, a visiting professor at the New School University in New York, professor of economics emeritus at UMass Amherst, author of a number of books, including Democracy at Work, A Cure for Capitalism, Occupy the Economy, Challenging Capitalism, and more. He's also the host of Economic Update. Welcome to the program, Richard Wolff.
Thank you, Sonali. Glad to be here.
So first of all, are fears of a massive trade war overblown? Right now, this is more of a war of words. And some say that it's only going to impact a very small portion of both the economies of both countries.
Well, the answer to that, the honest answer is nobody knows. My guess is that the Trump administration, which initiated all of this, they don't know either. Here's the problem. Yes, at this point, it's words. It's positioning yourself to try to get a free benefit from the other side by threatening all sorts of things. It's not a very adult way of dealing with problems, but at this point, it's just words. But here's the problem. Both in the United States and in China, political leaders are worried about how they appear to their bases, their political supporters. Mr. Trump is clearly trying to show that he's a tough guy. He's going to do better for the United States than his competitors in the Democratic Party and so on. So he is now risking that if he backs down, if he just does word games, he will be losing support among his followers. The Chinese leadership may be in a very similar situation. So the problem is, and history has many lessons like this, that a war of words can become a war of deeds, and a trade war can degenerate into a military confrontation. It has happened in the past. There's no reason to assume it can't happen in the future. So that the conclusion I would offer is that this is a very dangerous way of playing political games, negotiating maneuvers, because of where it can lead, and one would wish that Mr. Trump hadn't done it. My own personal reading is that he's in trouble with his own base, with his support in the United States. It has been a problem for him from day one, and grandiose political theatrics, building a wall in Mexico, hassling immigrants, all the rest of it can now be supplemented by beating up on another group of foreign people, in this case the Chinese, and that he hopes it looks good, even if substantially it's still small potatoes.
Now, this is one of the things that he tweeted on April 4th. He said, "We are not in a trade war with China. That war was lost many years ago by the foolish or incompetent people who represented the U.S. Now we have a trade deficit of $500 billion a year with intellectual property theft of another $300 billion. We cannot let this continue." He added a second tweet saying, "When you're already $500 billion down, you can't lose." What is he talking about?
This is pure political theater. It represents, as I'll explain in a moment, either vast ignorance on Mr. Trump's part, or else, to be blunt, just plain lying. Let me explain. What happened over the last 30 or 40 years is a massive movement of American companies closing their production factories, mostly manufacturing, here in the United States, and moving production instead to China. Something on the order of 40 to 50% of the goods coming into the United States from China were produced by American companies operating those factories in China. Why did those factories go there? They went there to make more profits. They could pay Chinese workers much, much less than they had to pay American workers. And they went to China so that they could pay workers less and pocket the difference that they were saving on wages as so much extra profit. So the notion that incompetent presidents or wheeler dealers less adept at it all than Mr. Trump are to blame here is so phony and so false that it's kind of obvious as a political ploy. If you didn't want to become dependent on all the goods we now bring in from China, you would have had to interfere in the private profit-driven decisions of American corporations over the last 30 or 40 years, which Republicans didn't do and Democrats didn't do. This kind of interference in private capitalist profit calculations is nothing that Mr. Trump has ever done or advocated. So to tell the story that there's some governmental failure here is ridiculous. The reason the government never interfered with those companies moving to China is because the government is more dependent on those companies and their contributions than on anything else. And so they weren't about to interfere into the profit-making activities of American corporations.
So if China has so much more on the U.S., if the U.S. is at such a massive trade deficit with China, meaning that the U.S. Imports many more Chinese goods than China imports U.S. goods, doesn't that simply give China way more leverage to impose tariffs on the U.S. than the U.S. does on China? Trump is saying when you're already $500 billion down, you can't lose. But you can lose. You can lose much more, right?
You can lose more. But even before we go to that, let me just explain something about international trade. Because the Chinese sell to the American people much, much more than the reverse, the Chinese accumulate all the dollars that we pay to buy Chinese clothing and appliances and equipment and all of that. They don't need those dollars to buy back goods from the United States because of this deficit. Well, then what do they do with the dollars that they're accumulating by selling all that stuff in the United States? The answer is that the Chinese government has taken all those dollars and lent them to the United States. The deficit that the United States runs as a country requires it to borrow that money. What it spends above taxes it raises has to be borrowed. The largest single lender to the United States, which is the world's largest debtor country, is the People's Republic of China. If they were to stop lending to the United States government, it would put this government in great difficulty. If they sold the government bonds that they have, and that they have more of than any other country on earth, that would depress the prices of those bonds, and that means that interest rates rise, which would cause every homeowner in America with a mortgage, every person buying a car on time, everybody with balances on their credit card, every young person borrowing for college, to pay much more than they now do. The ability of the Chinese, if you actually push them the way Mr. Trump is making noises he's going to do, they're going to be put in a very difficult position. They depend in China on selling all these goods to the United States. If you back them into a corner, threatening, and it's a real serious threat, to close off the market they depend on, you are provoking them into using the leverage they have, which is in the trade of goods and services, but also in this lending to the United States government. And that risks a disruption of the world economy, the likes of which we have not seen in our lifetime.
And meanwhile, China remains poised most strongly in terms of the health of its economy to withstand any kind of a global recession that could be sparked by this. And Americans could stand to lose so much. Now, so that would be the sort of worst case scenario. Even in the short term, however, that small section of, although that small list of goods that China says it will have retaliatory tariffs on U.S. imports, wouldn't that, if all these promises go through, wouldn't that hurt U.S. workers and U.S. industries and U.S. corporations that are selling to China?
Absolutely. What you do when you put a tariff, whoever you are, whatever country is doing it, is you make it more expensive for people inside your country to buy these goods from abroad because you've made them more expensive by adding the tax to them. And that means wherever those goods are produced, you're going to have less sales, and therefore workers are going to get laid off. So, for example, the Chinese imposed tariffs, or say they are going to, on aircraft parts. Well, that's very bad for the Boeing company and for other companies involved that produce airplane parts. If they can't sell to the Chinese who have been buying huge quantities of them, you can bet they will be laying off workers here in the United States. That's why the explanation of Mr. Trump and his supporters that this kind of tariff war is going to help or create or preserve American jobs is, again, simply counting on people not understanding what the linkages here are. And so it will threaten the United States' jobs if they continue to talk, as they have been, about putting tariffs in China on soybeans. Let me explain. The biggest buyer of soybeans grown and produced here in the United States is the People's Republic of China. Vast numbers of farmers, small farmers, huge agribusinesses, are going to be in deep difficulty if the Chinese put that tariff on there and therefore start getting their soybeans somewhere else or using something in place of soybeans, et cetera, et cetera. So yes, that's why any reasonable economist will tell you, when you figure out all the short and long-term implications of putting tariffs, it becomes impossible to know whether the net effect will be more jobs, fewer jobs, how much prices will go up. Let me give you an example of how powerful it can be. And I'm going to choose as my example the United States, because part of what Mr. Trump is doing, and particularly the voice of his new economic advisor, Mr. Kudlow, is to suggest that the Chinese did something unusual, didn't play by the rules, whereas we, wonderful Americans, we play by the rules. This is childish nonsense. Every country uses tariffs, manipulates them, manipulates their currency in order to try to make international trade work better for them. All countries have always done it. Let me give you the example of the United States in a way that'll drive it home. In 1963, that's a half century ago, the United States imposed a tariff of 25% on all trucks produced abroad and brought into the United States. That's a protective act that the government of the United States took in 1963, and that successive Republican and Democratic Congresses and presidents have kept in power. Just last week, President Trump signed a trade agreement with South Korea, which extends that tariff. It was supposed to expire in the year 2021, but has extended it 20 more years to 2041, at least in the case of South Korea. What this means is that trucks, starting in 1963, could not be brought in from abroad because whatever the cost of the truck, the price we in America had to pay was the cost plus the 25% of the tariff. And what that meant was that American companies, Ford, General Motors, Chrysler, began to understand that they could make a pile of money because they could jack up the price of a truck here in the United States way above what it cost them, making a huge profit because Americans would have no choice if they wanted to buy a truck, since bringing it in from abroad would be even more expensive because there the tariff applies, whereas if you buy a domestically produced truck, you don't.
Right.
That's why in America, starting in the 1960s, the advertising went to work to convince Americans that it was rugged, that it was manly, that it was sexy, whatever you want, to have a truck, not a car, a little truck like a Silverado or an F-Series Ford car or a Chrysler Ram truck. These things became cultural icons, not because Americans wanted a truck, but because the profit was there because of the tariff which has existed. Now, let me remind everyone, trucks have a lousy fuel usage. They use many more miles per gallon than do cars. They pollute like crazy. Having a truck wasn't a good thing for the American people, was not government looking away or not intervening. It was the private sector getting a special protection in the way of this tariff and making a fortune. And for the last 50 years, Americans have paid more for trucks than they would have had to if the foreign trucks, which are better and cheaper than Americans, had been allowed to come in. So that's an example of the richest, biggest country in the world using tariffs to manipulate trade in their favor of the industries that get that protection. Every country does right. that. That's how capitalism works.
Well, finally, Richard, if Trump was really interested in protecting American workers, if we were interested in protecting the U.S. economy from the whims of other countries that may have political and economic leverage over us, what advice would you give him? I mean, it isn't good for either the economy or the environment that Americans import so many cheap, often disposable or, you know, poorly made goods from China.
Well, there's a number of ways to answer the question. At the most profound level, let's start with that. You're allowing, in a capitalist world economy, you're allowing the private profit decisions of individual enterprises to create, to shape, to control what happens to you economically. That's why I stress that our problems with China have really relatively little to do with China and a great deal to do with the profit drive. American corporations, to make more profits, went to China. Nobody held a gun to their heads. Nobody required it. No government said, now you must go to China. None at all. The government did not interfere in the private enterprise profit system. And now we are living with the dependent results.
Right.
So the implication is, if you didn't want this kind of economic development over the last 40 years, landing you in the kind of predicaments we now have, you have to do something with the mechanisms that shape the economic decisions that are being made. As long as you let profit be the driver of a system, in other words, as long as you accept capitalism as a thing that can't be questioned or challenged, you have to live with the results. Let me make it more concrete. Suppose that we change, just as a mental exercise, we change the organization of our enterprises. Instead of them being run for profit of shareholders and boards of directors, we instead make the workplace democratic. We say that all the basic decisions of a factory or an enterprise or an industry are to be made one person, one vote, in a democratic way, so that big decisions, for example, where do we locate production, are made democratically. it's easy to understand. If the workers in the United States who made all the goods that were once produced here had had any role at all in deciding on the location of production, they would never have destroyed their jobs, their incomes, their communities, their families by seeing those jobs go to China. They wouldn't have gone to China, and they wouldn't have allowed the jobs to go there easier. Would that have meant they might not have made as much profit? Absolutely. But they're not governed by profit. A worker co-op economy isn't driven by profit. It's driven by what workers democratically decide is the most important thing to them. Less profits, but stay in the community you were born in and where your job is located, for example. So I'm afraid that the problems we have are not things that can be solved by this law or that tax or this tariff or jawboning in the manner of Mr. Trump's tweets. Our problems are now systemic. They have to do with the way we've organized our economy because the chickens have come home to roost. We're living with the results of allowing a profit-driven private enterprise system to work its way into this dead end.
Well, Richard Wolff, I thank you so much for joining us today. What's a good website where people can follow the work that you do and your analysis?
Well, thank you for allowing me to mention it there, too. The first one is called democracyatwork.info. All one word, democracyatwork.info. And there you can read about these kinds of different organizations of production. And the other one is simply my own, rdwolff with two Fs. .com. So either of those websites will allow you to follow everything we do, communicate with us, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and so on.
We'll post links to those websites later on our program. Thank you so much, Richard.
Thank you, Sonali. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
My guest is Dr. Richard Wolff, visiting professor at New School, University of New York, professor of economics emeritus at UMass Amherst, author of a number of books. We've been discussing the impending U.S.-China trade war initiated by Donald Trump. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.